Okay, so, you know, this year we've tried to go through different personalities. So here's a personality I don't think I've quoted maybe ever in our parsha, maybe once, I'm not sure. But there is a fascinating teacher of Tanakh. She lives in Yerushalayim, Aviva Zornberg, who synthesizes literary approaches, psychoanalytic approaches to Tanakh. Sometimes I really don't understand it because I don't really understand all of some of the postmodern things she quotes, and I'll be honest. But sometimes she says things that are just because she just thinks so differently than I do, that, you know, I just hear them and I'm like, oh, that really makes a lot of sense. I never would have thought about it that way. So I took some time to read through her three chapters on Vayeshev, Miketz, Vayigash, the story of Yosef. And there were a few fascinating perspectives that came up. So let me pick up on one. We'll see if I have time for a second. I was planning on doing two of them this week, but you know, it's been a bit of a crazy week here. So she has a fascinating discussion of how the brothers told Yaakov that Yosef was alive. So you've probably heard this this midrashic tradition, right? How does the midrash think that that the brothers told Yaakov that Yosef was alive? Who do they task with?
Serach
bat Asher, right? Serach bat Asher. Now, right? Why exactly? Right? What exactly is that midrash getting at? When it says it's Serach bat Asher, and the story around that, what exactly are they getting at? So, what she points out is that it's not right. It's not just that, like, there's a lack of information, right? That Yaakov just, hey, Avi, that Yaakov doesn't know that Yosef is alive. But, you know, he's been mourning for a very long time. A very long time, for 20 years plus for the death. It's not the type of thing that you can just pop on someone, right? He's not necessarily going to believe it. It's not just a question of providing information. What you need to do is somehow, right, you need to push and be able to break in to his emotions to actually get him to believe it. That's not an easy thing to do, right? This is what he's been hoping against hope, but he's rightfully incredulous. And what she argues is that what the Midrash is trying to do is claim that they got Serach bat Asher to do it, not just because, well, they got Serach, but because simply conveying the information wouldn't have worked. And what they needed was to tap into his emotions. And the way to do that was through music and through poetry, where you would be able to tap in at a different level. And she notes that in the Midrash, in some versions of this Midrash, both in Pirkei Rilazar and Midrash HaGadol, they spell out exactly what's going on. And they say, right, if we tell him right away that Yosef is alive, so, right, he might die. He'll have a stroke. He'll die from the shock. So what did they do? They told Serach, tell her that Yosef is alive. But then the Midrash, and I don't know if you know the second half of the Midrash, what she did was the following. She waited till Yaakov was davening, right? He was standing in tefillah. And then she said in rhyme, Yosef b'Mitzrayim, Yoldu lo al birkayim, Menashe v'Ephraim. Right? She waited until he was davening, and then she came up with this rhyming poem, which she said in astonishment. She said, in shock, right, again, Yosef b'Mitzrayim, Yoldu lo al birkayim, Menashe v'Ephraim. And his heart failed, but when he saw the wagons, right, that's the other half of the tradition, right, when he saw the wagons and whatever Chazal think is captured in there, the Egla Rufa, etc., he believed it and it revived him. But what is exactly is going on here, right? Why does the Midrash say that she tells him in rhyme while he's davening, right? Like, what exactly is the psychology that the Mishnah is, that the Midrash, rather, is focusing on? So what she argues is that she does it, right? She waits for him to be davening, and as the Midrash says, she doesn't just say it, but she says it in a tone of wonder. And the reason she thinks this is true is because tefillah is a time where ideally you are expressing your vulnerability before God. And therefore she thinks that what the reason the Midrash wants Yaakov to be davening is because she needed to already get to Yaakov when he's at a time of like that doubt and vulnerability before God, because it's at that time that she might be able to actually convince him, right? If he's just there mourning and she says, Yosef is alive, he either won't believe it, or as the brothers are worried, he will believe it and he'll just die from the shock. But davening, where you're already expressing your vulnerability, you're expressing that God can do the impossible, right? You're already in that mindset, right? So Serach decides that's the moment that she's going to tell him that Yosef's alive. But even then, she's not going to tell him in prose. She's not going to just convey the information. What's she going to do? She's going to say it in wonder in a poem, right? Because that is going to tap into not just his intellectual, but into his emotional side, which will help him come to terms with it and actually absorb the information. Right, as she writes, prayer is the quintessential act of this kind, right, of unclarity, and Sarah deliberately sings her rhyming song to fuse with Yaakov's prayer. The wonder with which she sings does not crash through the web of Jacob's thoughts, it intertwines with them, tentative, almost questioning. Her song does not include philosophical discussions about truth and beauty, and therefore does not generate them in Yaakov. It does not reflect on the nature of poetry, it is a poem affirming relationship between fragmentary rhyming statements. Past, present, and future are contained in three simple lines, right? Meaning, Yosef b'Mitzrayim, Yaldulo b'Erkayim in the past, Menashe v'Ephraim, there's already another generation, right? She's like, she's tapping into a lot of emotions through the poem, through these like, right, the fact that she talks about the past and the present and that there's another generation, right? She's doing when he's davening, which is already a time when you're expressing vulnerability and the impossible. And then she writes that Jacob is indeed almost overwhelmed as the song gently filters through his consciousness. But still he stands in prayer, working to metabolize Serach's poem into his own poem, even as the dangers of Teruf, the total loss of consciousness, reach their highest pitch. Right, and then she skips down, she says, Serach has not done as the brother asked, introduced him gradually to the new reality so that life is not endangered. She's sung the words of unbearable desire to the music of longing and recollection. And she has invited Yaakov to remember a world in which despair and hope, discontinuity and continuity are interlaced in the poetry of his prayers. And I think, right, she always has a very good way of reading Midrash, right, because that's what she's doing. She's trying to get into the emotions and the psychology of the Midrash, and I think she's right, right, that what Chazal are getting at by painting this scene of Serach doing it while he's davening in a song, in a rhyming poem, in that way, in wonderment, right, rather than just saying it as prose, it's highlighting what in Pshat is definitely true, which is getting Yaakov to believe this, right, is not just an intellectual act, right? There's a lot of emotional work to be done because he's been hoping this for 20 years, 22 years, right? And to say it to him, again, either he wouldn't believe it or he would die. The only way to get him to the point where he can start to accept it is to simultaneously work with his cognitive faculties, but also to somehow play directly on his emotions to make it easier for him to accept it and not just hear it. Right? I think she's right that that's really what the Midrash is getting at. And again, by saying it's happening during Tefillah, which is that time when you are expressing vulnerability to God, and again, like I said, you are acknowledging that God can accomplish the impossible at that moment, right? That's the right time to sort of tap into that religious, emotional sensibility. Anyway, so that's how she reads this Midrashic tradition of what's lying behind the Serach story, especially the way it's presented in these Midrashim that add this sing-song poem, which again, you know, I think she's right that it's not just cute, right? By Chazal imagining that she's saying this in a poem in rhyme, they're reminding us, right, how much more is going on here than pure cognition. Which is, I think, something that, you know, is important to realize. It should be obvious in the story, but it's definitely something Chazal are trying to bring to the fore. Okay, let's call that, and Shir will do. Okay, and Shir will do a little bit later, I guess, on Zoom at about 11 o'clock. Okay.